Reading from the Levite. Volume 1, Chapter 6, Text 111. Vinda Ranye, Vajubuvi Devam, Tatta Dova Dane Va, Na Ste Hinsa, Padani Nopiti, Rakshakasyapyapeksha. Yado Shashi Vipanatasta Mahisha Diyutta Saharam Bhutva Sajala Yadasham Ayam Ayantivatam. Vrindavan Forest, Govardhan Hill, and the whole area of Vraja are free from violence and theft. So one need not bother to watch one's cows. Cows simply go out onto the forest in the morning with the other domestic animals like the buffaloes, eat grass and drink water as they like, and then in the evening come home. Commentary. Pending. What's going on? Can everyone still hear me? Is everyone, anybody would like to say hello?
Harbo Maharaj.
Okay, it's still working. I just heard some sound. Okay. The cows simply go out onto the forest in the morning with the other domestic animals like the buffaloes, eat grass and drink water as they like, and then in the evening come home. Commentary, tending cows is difficult work, even in pleasant surroundings. But in Vraja, the labor of herding turns into play. Krishna and his friends effortlessly cared for many cows, and also other domestic animals, including buffaloes and goats. Wow, we can all think of the work that we have to do, and you know, sometimes getting in subways and working for people who don't care for us or whatever the situation is. And this is the idyllic world where you just go out to the forest and budge it with the cows. You herd the cows, they get exercise, they eat fresh grass. And then the cow turns it into white liquid gold. So there's a quote from the Bhagavatam. While the cowherd boys were completely absorbed in playing, their cows wandered far away. The cows hungered for more grass. With no one to watch them, they entered a dense forest. The goats, cows, and buffaloes passed from one part of the forest to another. Bhagavatam 10:19:12. Because all the sacred spots of Vraja are under the special protection of demigods and other servants of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, evil influences can never prevail. For example, the village of Nanda Maharaj is protected by Lord Shiva in the form of Nandishvara. Anyway, usually I finish the purport and then catch up, but last night, I just thought it was kind of revolutionary. We had the 12-hour kirtan at the Boone Street Temple, which is such a beautiful, quaint Radha Krishna temple. And the kirtan went on to about 11 o'clock, and it really reached its height. And I was sitting there with the owner of the studio, who's such a nice spiritual person, and just relishing this complete Vrindavan atmosphere. I mean, they even had Ram Roy read kind of an Andrew Kirtan. The mood was just really wonderful. You know, it wasn't, there were very few, and well, the place was kind of packed towards the end for sure, but it wasn't a predominance by any means of, you know, people initiated into the tradition or even in line from Prabhupada, but the house in which the whole world could live. Somebody, it was just really wonderful. I mean, and the reason I'm mentioning this is because they're discussing how Vrindavan is protected by Lord Shiva in the form of Nandeshwar, Kapishwar Mahadev, and you can't enter Vrindavan without the mercy of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is Dikpal. He protects the four directions. There's Kameshwar Mahadev and Kamyuvan, I guess is that, in the west, I don't know the directions, and Gopishwar in another direction, and Chakleshwar in another direction. So there's Shivalingams, and it makes sense, because to enter into Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan, the real reality that actually exists, is the energy of God moving towards God in love. And the energy of God moving towards God in love is the energy of God moving towards everything. It's the perfect conception of the resting of the heart's desire for love to the greatest extent in the most satisfying way. And that means to give up the illusion that I am the center. To give up that illusion. If you remain in that illusion, you do not see who is the center. And you also don't see yourself. You live in a world that's superficial and full of duality. The real Vrindavan is the world that's free from illusion. And what is the illusion? False ego. False ego is I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And things exist for that purpose. Even if I have not achieved that purpose, the world revolves around me. The world doesn't revolve around me, certainly. It doesn't revolve around us. But if you're in that conception, you will always be unhappy because the world is not revolving around us. And if you try to take that position, which creates an illusion of the mind, body, and things in relationship to the mind, body, as eyes, you'll always be frustrated. You can only be satisfied when you're in the consciousness of love and devotion for one who does control the world, because then the world will move according to your desire, because your desire is not to control or enjoy it, but your desire is to serve it. Service is always available. Lordship is not. So enter Vrindavan, you've got to get rid of that consciousness. And as you're going to read in this purport, that's the real Vrindavan. And it exists for those who have that consciousness. And for those who don't, there's a certain illusion that it's not Vrindavan. It's a creation for our enjoyment, and it begins to manifest in that way. But here it says, really, that doesn't enter the real Vrindavan. And how Vrindavan is always protected. And I have that sense. I mean, Vrindavan has been covered, but in a way it hasn't changed. It's become more beautiful. Although I do miss, I mean, in one sense, I remember when the Krishna Balaram Mandir was the end of the world, and the quiet. If I used to do Harinam for 2 years, every single day, for 2 years, I took Prabhupada's instruction and order on that. I took Harinam to the imagine our sadhana in the summer was after Mangal Arti. Take Harinam Kirtan down to the Jamuna, which used to flow as a strong stream right near the Parikrama path. I remember diving off those cliffs into the clean blue waters of the Jamuna. How things have changed. And I remember the elevated spirit despite the conception, despite the environment. It's funny, you know, this is like Sunday mornings. This is like my church class here, you know, doing what the rest of America does. You know, it's Sunday night, you get a big feast and wake up Monday morning with that. So maybe some of the country's influence is going to get me to be a preacher here. Lord Shiva begged for the service of guarding Krishna's home and showed his gratitude for the appointment by giving the blessings that Nandishwar Hill and Nandadam on its peak would never be attacked by Rakshasas. Many followers of Kamsa were able to harass the cowherds of Raja and try in various ways to kill Krishna and Balaram. But that happened only by the arrangement of Krishna's yoga maya to enhance the pleasure of Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. So yoga maya creates the illusion that reveals reality. Because the highest reality is Krishna. And Krishna is revealed in love. So for that love to be forceful and intimate, one cannot see Krishna as God. Mother Yasoda sees Krishna as her son. Mother Yasoda sees Krishna as the object of her mercy, the object of her protection and care. So Yogamaya facilitates the highest reality of Krishna's heart. Many followers of Kamsa were able to harass the cowherd boys of Raja and try in various ways to kill Krishna and Balaram. But that happened only by the arrangement of Krishna's yoga might enhance the pleasure of Krishna and his pastimes with his devotees. None of these would-be violators of the peace of Raja could cause any real harm other than their own deaths. In modern times, criminals and various materialistic influences seem to have infiltrated Vajradham, but that is only a superficial appearance to our unpurified eyes. I saw that to my unpurified eyes. Funny, I'm serious. The head of the mafia in Vrindavan, his name was Gurudev. Anyway, I don't want to go into that sordid part of Vrindavan. I made a joke once that there was a bicycle gang in Vrindavan called the Naraka Apsaras. One of my Sanskrit jokes, Naraka means hell, and Apsaras means angels. Materialistic persons may briefly come and go on the thin surface by which Maya covers the Dham from unworthy eyes. They may even construct permanent commercial buildings and roads. The actual eternal abode remains untouched by their transient interference. To the pure devotees who come to reside in Vrindavan Dham, the same Yoga Maya grants the vision by which they can see the divine truth. So many times people have visited Vrindavan and on Parikram, I've had that fortune to sometimes help people in this way. I saw people enchanting and hearing, and a door opens to the original Vrindavan, the original beauty of Vrindavan, the original purity of the residents of Vrindavan. You know, and Satchinandana Swami told me he has that confidence that there will always be a sacred place where you can do your bhajan. So Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Sanakara Yaksirumikamyena Tajnai Sri Guruve Namaha Ancha Kapa Kuru Vyashcha Kripa Shundu Bhaye Vicha Patitanam Pavane Yo Vaishnava Yo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Bhava Sadhanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this is Mohini, the mother of Balaram, and she's glorifying Vrindavan in so many verses. And I just want to put it in context that, you know, when a class is once a week, so many things happen in between that to get back my frame of reference is kind of important. And therefore, in my classes, I usually bring it up to date and bring the context. I hope I don't go too far back. But it's also been 2 weeks because last week was the, I guess we call it Vyasa Puja. I led my disciples in the worship in cyclic succession. We had a program some of you heard about class. So let me see if I can bring it into context in just a general way. So the theme of the Bhagavatam Nitya is Narada's search for the topmost devotee. And somehow he's guided in a progressive way. This is in the contradictory realm of perfect, more perfect, and most perfect, which they're here, the Yatana, the most beloved. It's a contradiction, but there is a gradation of perfection. And we even see it in the ordinary world in terms of love. A mother's, a friend's love to another friend can be perfect, but a mother's love could be more intimate than the friend's. Although the friend's is perfect, the mother's is more intimate, and then there may be a romantic lover whose love is even more intimate. Whether the mother wants to be the romantic lover or the friend wants to be the mother. Just so, the same way, there's perfected love, but deeper and deeper intimacy in love, and Narada is searching for that. And that's really spiritual life. Spiritual life is your search. Those who are the most spiritual They're searching for their spiritual identity. They're searching for the self. That really guides their life. And with your, when you're with someone who's spiritually advanced, you always feel the intensity of their search. And the enthusiasm for the search, that's our spiritual life. And it begins with some Bunda Yan, some understanding of the value of what you are searching for. Therefore, to advance in spiritual life, it is very important to study in the Shastra, which reveals the glory of God as the ultimate search. And to search for God, you must search for the devotee, because it's the devotee who has God within their heart. So this is a search. And in his search, he finds the perfect devotee. But the perfect devotee is a humble devotee. Doesn't want to be designated as a worthy devotee. And it's also humble enough to point to one who is a better devotee. So we're following this path of Narada Muni, as it's seeing all the great souls in the Bhagavad tradition and seeing the manifestations of their ultimate love and devotion, and seeing the beauty of that. If you think of people that are actually beautiful, you think of people that are loving. How many times does it, you know, some chemistry, a boy meets girl, a girl meets boy, and superficially initially they think they've met their object of attraction, until in relationship they see the other person's heart. And then what becomes attractive becomes the most unattractive. Of course, we're talking about the spiritual world where it's lined up, the heart and the form are one. The beautiful heart is the beautiful form. So in that journey, he reaches Uddhava, and he just wants a particle of dust from his feet, indicating how worthy he considers the devotee and the great devotee. How, in his consciousness, he has understood the value of his objective, the value of God and God's devotee. And because he understands the value, his desire for it is the most intense. So we see Narada and Dwarka, he meets Uddhava. And Uddhava in the, I don't know, archetypal or the inherent, is the better word, humility of the Vaishnava. Because the Vaishnava sees God and sees himself. He sees himself. And he sees himself as a servant. And he sees the dependence that he has on God. And because his love or her love is so intense, he feels he's bereft of it, like a person. The more hungry he is, the more he feels a lack of food. And devotee is so hungry for Krishna, he feels a lack of Krishna. And anyway, Uddhava points to the gopis. This one of Uddhava's great qualities was that he was so intimate with Krishna that Krishna could send a message to him to the gopis, and then his, you know, we don't want to much, you know, his pride was crushed to death. But what happens is as he points to the gopis, Rohini begins to glorify the gopis, but her intent is not to glorify the gopis. Her intent is to say, how can the gopis be the object of Krishna's mercy when they're suffering to such a degree in separation? And then there comes a question, an ontological question, that is perhaps required to understand Krishna and to have faith. Why, if they're suffering, and they're so much the object of Krishna's love, why hasn't Krishna come back to Vrindavan? I mean, I think he answered that in a pretty substantial, satisfactory way. So now we're up to a very interesting part. Uddhava, Rohini, have explained the pitiful condition of the residents of Vrindavan. And this history of how they felt when Krishna left, the degree of their separation. They have such intense separation and they're suffering. Prayers by Raghunath Das Goswami to Srimati Radharani in the mood of one of those gopis, Manjari, with the medicine of the red lac of your lotus feet, please cure this servant of yours near death by the snake bite of separation from you. So the history is Krishna doesn't return. His father returns with a message that Krishna will return. And they're devastated. And then Balaram returns with a message that Krishna, they're devastated. And then Uddhava, speaking really from the heart. I'm working with Alex from Washington, D.C. On some kind of drama presentation that I can be involved in a way, in introducing it. Maybe you're thinking calling it The Monk and the Thespian. And, you know, he was commenting on drama, but he's, you know, he's professionally so accomplished and trained. In Krishna Leela, how it's presented, of course, we see dramas that are just, I don't know what to say about that, but, you know, so, anyway, just not really good. But the real insight he has is to, you know, that a drama has to have a developed character. So you could see in something like this, the character. Just think of what is the character of Uddhava. You know, what is he actually feeling at this particular moment? Let's say you had to play Uddhava. So, yeah, what is he actually feeling? you know, because especially let's say this scene, you know, they're imploring Krishna to go back, and he begins to write. His hand is shaking. He begins to write a letter. And what is Uddhava thinking? Uddhava's thinking, you know, I went back there. I was the third person to go back. And still Krishna did not return. He saw what they were feeling like. It's real. They were feeling the intense separation from the person they loved more than life itself. And disappointment after disappointment. And it's Uddhava, he empathized, he felt their pain. And now he's seeing Krishna write another letter that he's going to bring a message back. Whoa. What their love and separation. What do it feel like, Uddhava's thinking? And I come back again in the condition that they're in? A condition born of love manifest in the deepest burning separation from the object of their love. What they will feel like now, what Uddhava feels like as he has to plead with Krishna. And definitely have to understand his relationship. And he's the courier, he's the assistant, Krishna's superior, but it's intimate. Now, there's a little respect there. A little respect, but he feels this is not proper. And he has to advise Krishna. In that way, getting deeply into that character, what is Uddhava experiencing in his heart, both for the residents of Vrindavan and for Krishna. So he's writing a letter, you know, that I will return. And then in the midst of this drama, the spiritual reality is drama. It's not imposed. It's not imposed by karma. It's manifest out of love. It's an exchange of love. And therefore the Leela Shakti, the pastime potency, creates drama. Because drama is what heightens love. Without drama, there's no love. Think of your relationships. There's drama. There's perfect drama to heighten love. Just thinking of relationship with people you love, the different circumstances that heighten that love. Whatever the relationship is. So, Padmavati, who is the wife of Kamsa and Krishna's aunt, and the envious sort, who naturally doesn't like the devotees, out of envy, she starts to, again, berate the Rajavasis. You know, Krishna, you know, why should Krishna go back? They mistreated him so badly. You know, making him go out and tend those cows. And she made all these accusations and then sending him out into the dangerous forest of Vrindavan. So Rohini here, you know, is coming to the defense and saying, you know, and what's the defense? She said two things, that the Brijbasis are not so, you know, are not nice people. And not only they're not nice people, but they what did they do? They exploit this young boy. It's child labor. They send him out to the forest of Vrindavan. So she responds by saying, you know, describing their love. No, they do have love. And how much love? that daytime is like black night because Krishna goes to that forest. There's darkness wherever there's not Krishna. And if Krishna is gone for a second, they're in anxiety. Even if the coward boys are in the forest with Krishna and the cows are parading through the trees or grazing through the trees, and Krishna's herding behind the cows because he loves Vrindavan, and when the hoofprints of the cows hit the soft sands of Vrindavan, Krishna soothes those sands with his lotus feet. You have the image now of the Krishna going through the forest of Vrindavan with his 108 multicolored and multi-shaped herds, blowing the flute, which is expressing the love for his devotee. And in a place which manifests out of love, the beauty to please all the senses of Krishna and his devotees. The many streams of the Jamuna flowing gently through the forest. But when they did Krishna in a distance from one coward boy who goes out perhaps because sometimes the cows wander, and then sees in the near distance Krishna going through a forest. And when Krishna passes through a tree and they cannot see Krishna for a second, Rohini says they say, Krishna, Krishna in separation, Krishna, Krishna in separation. So we hear now in the part where Rohini, the counter Padmavati, about Krishna having to be sent into this forest, concludes her description of that forest with the sparkling water where the most beautiful and variety of late lotuses spread their fragrance, carried by the wind in a mood of service to refresh and light and refresh the air and the touch of Vrindavan. And the lotuses, they're trembling with swarms of bees. And all the beautiful different birds. Sometimes when we take prikrams and we go through the back roads, going to Nandigram and Barsana, we can see that. So she's describing, no, this forest is the Yamuna flows and it's picturesque and it astonishes the mind, and there's so many rivers. And there's soft sands, and by the soft sands there's newly grown grasses, and charming animals and birds. They put their enmity aside. The environment affects the consciousness. And the person who is completely loving, without a sense of ill will towards any living entity, the shape and power of that mind creates a vibration of peace and love that affects even the animals and the natural enemies like the mongoose and the cobra will even embrace. And there's trees and there's creepers and they decorate the shores and they're bowing down with splendid fruit. I don't know if any of you have gone with me. I have a little path along the Jamuna. And it's almost like, it's just like, it's like a little road. And then you have these little, by like a forest. And it goes towards Madan Mohan. And you open these little wood gates. And I had a little friend, an old bridge bossy, who created a little enclave where I guess he owned a lot of the land. And he's an old man. And he had its own little enclave and would leave the home every day and stay on his rope bed. And he planted some trees, and you come in there, and there's like this, these lemon trees. You know, when you see the fruits, fresh fruits, and there was a lemon tree, and then there was amala, and he would allow us to pick some, and they were beautiful fruits. So she's saying, and peacocks and cuckoos. And the cuckoos in five. And then described here how Vrindavan is free. And then some violence and theft. And what you see is just a thin veil of covering. So, wow. So now an argument goes back. Now, Padmati says no. Vrindavan, you're being too liberal with your words about Vrindavan. Not that nice. And she's going to make an argument about Vrindavan. So I guess we'll just read that today. Vidha Ucha Uvacha. Vidovacha, the old lady, said, you child, you're too free with your words. If what you say is true, then why do we hear that the cows and other animals in Vraja are now in danger of dying? Because no one is taking care of them. So this is very, very common. When someone of ill will tries to curse Krishna or the devotees, Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, manifests an alternative meaning to their words, which is actually a glorification. This is one role of the goddess Saraswati. And we know, those of you that are somewhat familiar with the Sanskrit language, because the words are, there's rules for combining words when you pronounce Sanskrit. So for the pronunciation, then there's just a science where words combine, and when they combine, the syllables change, but the person who knows Sanskrit knows what word they're referring to, even though they're same. Like here, there's vritha uvacha. But the Sandhi, when they come together, the long A and the long U created an O. So it's vidovacha, which allows the poetry to flow. But someone who knows Sanskrit knows that that O is actually, it's a word that's combined. So in that way, it's very intricate. And the words can be broken up in different ways. So when Sishupala was cursing Krishna and called him the lowest of all men, just by a slight grammatical change, by interpreting the word in a different way, it can also mean the person who makes others go down. And we know about these slight discrepancies when Indra performed Indra performed the sacrifice to kill Vritrasura. And he pronounced the word wrong, just one letter wrong. The whole meaning of the word changed from the enemy of Indra to Indra, who is an enemy, or something. It changed it to mean, rather than Indra being in the incantation, Indra being in the position to kill the enemy, it just changed it to the enemy who will kill. It's a slight thing. So here, even though she's condemning Vraja as the animals are dying, it's actually a glorification because they're not dying out of food. They're dying out of love. And this is such an important point, why we're dying. Kastuba told me that Dhananath Swami, glorious soul, was invited to this charity function in New York where, so many famous people, Madonna and people of those caliber were there. And he wasn't introduced properly because the person somehow was supposed to introduce him wasn't there, and he had like 5 minutes to speak, so he said, "Oh, Radhanathswami." He was actually Sean Lennon, John Lennon's son. He said, "Okay, now Radhanathswami." So he's very humble and meek, so he's sitting up there, and the audience is in these exclusive tables, you know, paying $100,000 to sit with Madonna at the same table. And everyone's talking, and he just goes, "Om Agnanam," very how he does it. People's attention. The first thing he said is, "When I met Mother Teresa 40 years ago, I'll never forget what she told me, that the real hunger is not for food. The real hunger is for love." And that's actually a fact. Why we're not satisfied is we're not selfless and loving enough. And we're not humble enough to feel love. It's a spiritual condition. That's our dissatisfaction. But because we haven't fully realized it, because we're not understanding our spiritual nature, we are searching for happiness. We are thinking that there are different wants that are causing love, or that are causing us anxiety. That it's actually the lack of money, the lack of prestige, the lack of sensual experience that's actually causing our want. But you fill those things up, you still won't be satisfied, because the real want is the want of our essential being, the soul, which is a want of love and devotion. And one who has that can be happy. And if you don't have that, you can't be happy. What profit a man get if he gain the whole world but loses his soul? That we can have by Nam Kirtan. That we can have now. That, who is misfortunate? That which can satisfy us fully, we can have now. Paramadye sava shreshte nama sankirtan nira aparade poya paya premadan. In my class of devotional service, and if one of all them, chanting the holy name is best, and if one does it without offense, one can easily attain prema. Prema pumartha mahan, which is the artha, or the thing that has real value. We have to hear again and again to understand that this is our objective, and not let our paths swerve to so many other objectives as our goal. We can enjoy to live. We shouldn't live to enjoy. They shouldn't be our goal. They should be means to help us attain that goal. But how many times do we get swerved of other objectives because we're not hearing sufficiently, and the frame of reference of pure knowledge is not manifest fully in our hearts, fully in our consciousness? So they're suffering, cows, bulls, not that they needed no caretaker, the purport says, rather they needed Krishna. They suffered not from material objects, but from the ecstasy of separation, Vipalamba Bhav. They appeared in danger of dying, but even that appearance was false, because Vipalamba Bhav is a cause not of death, but of the highest perfection of life, achieved only by the most intelligent and competent of those who practice spiritual disciplines. The cows of Vraj are, in fact, not the dumb, helpless creatures they seem. Padmavati, however, is as usual, following her strange style of logic, to prove her own understanding of Krishna. So this is Vipralamba Bhav. Mityu. It's a Bhav. It's a Bhav. I'm dying. I'm dying. Because the object of my love, and there's nothing more important than the object of love. People will trade anything and give everything if they feel they have an object of love. They will give up their positions. Aren't there sometimes, I mean, stories of people, a king who loved a commoner, a prince, and had to give up his succession to the throne because the object of love is more valuable than that. People have given up their money for the object of their love. And people have given up their life for the object of their love. But it's the object of their love that has real value. If it's a worthy object of love, which means ultimately it has to be real. Eternal. It has to be eternal. Prikshit said, having heard all this, the blessed Lord Gopal felt overwrought with worry for his devotees. Scorching anxiety dried up his face. He was filled with dread. He glanced at the face of Baladev, who knew all the tidings of Raja, both past and present, and saw that it was covered with tears. Baladev, the son of Rohini, was unable to keep his composure. Remembering Braja and understanding his brother's mood, he began crying without control. But then he managed to speak distinctly. Why speak only about the cows, dear Krishna? All the animals in Braja are your beloved friends, and so are the birds and the trees, the bandira and the kadamba, the grass, the creepers, the lush bushes have all dedicated their lives to you. Now they are all wasting away, and so too are the rivers and mountains. Some of the people, dear brother, live only on the hope of your that your promises were true. Better you not ask to hear more news than this, because it would be too painful. I can only tell you that if you don't show your kindness to them soon, Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, will show them his. That you rid Kaliya's lake of its poison is only greatening their misery. And please hear still other reasons for their sorrow. In Vraja, the river Jamuna has turned so dry she hardly has any water. And Govardhan, who when you held him up touched heaven, has now become short. Isn't that a separation? The devotees who relish the nectar of your names cannot die of starvation. Instead, their end will come in a fire of a great dry forest. Having heard this, Krishna, who is gentle by nature and tormented by the suffering of others, grasped Balaram by the neck and shed a flood of tears like a person whose life is immune. As he cried with loud sobs in his beautiful voice, the tears washed away the cosmetics from his body. Dear Mother, he and Balaram then rolled on the ground and for a moment lost consciousness. Seeing the two lords crying in unprecedented, lamentable state, all the residents of the inner palace lost control of themselves. Rohini, Uddhava, Devaki, Rukmini, and all the rest, they lost control and sobbed again and again. When the Yadavs heard the sound of distressed crying coming from the inner palace, a sound never heard there before, they quickly came running, headed by Vasudeva and Udrasena. The Brahmins arrived, led by Garga, along with all the other people of the city. When they saw their beloved master in this extraordinary state, as they never had before, they too began to cry, overwhelmed. So that ends the chapter, and then we'll come to Purna. the complete perfection. Okay. Any questions? Anybody say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Henry.
Henry. Hare Krishna.
I went to Alex's three-hour-long play last night.
Oh, my God. He told me the plot. It's so heavy, I didn't even want to see the play. I hope you survived it.
It was barely survivable. I don't know how he does it. I mean, he maintains a level of intent. It just builds and builds and builds. It's incredibly intense. You know, it's an unbelievable piece of acting work. I was incredibly impressed. I wasn't bored for a second.
Yeah. When he came over and he told me the plot and the irony of it and the twist of it and the tragedy of it, I honestly thought I could not see that drama. But he, no, I'm serious. Do you know the name of the play, just in case anyone wants
Scorched.
To?
It's called
what?
Scorched.
Scorched.
And it burns.
Who wrote it?
It's a Lebanese guy, you know, that grew up in Canada, and it's been performed, you know, over 250 times internationally. But this is only the third production of it in the United States. That's what I remember about it from reading the notes.
Imagine when Alex does this chapter, the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, maybe in the role of Uddhava.
Well, he's certainly honing his skills for anything like that, I'll tell you.
Okay, thanks, Henry.
Thank you, Maharaj.
And what a nice program. I didn't even say that we had. Yeah. Hi, Rob, who is that?
Maharaj, it's Mahamuni.
Yeah, Mahamuni. Yeah.
Dandavat Pranam. Thank you for another great class.
Hello.
I'll try to walk away from my kids. I'm outside, so I'm sorry if it's too much noise. But
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, had mentioned earlier that somehow or other, you actually said without drama, there's no love. And I'm not sure if that's exactly how you were going to put it, but I think the basic point you're making is that love comes to fruition or comes to be richer when there's drama of various sorts. And so
yeah.
I guess I wanted to ask you, because in common practice, I mean, I have friends who have a predilection, let's say, to date women who are unstable.
Have what?
And I have a few friends who have predilections to date women who are unstable. And the idea is there's a lot of drama and there's a lot of weirdness. And somehow or other, some people say, well, that's exciting. And others say, well, that's nuts. You want a stable environment. You know, in other words, I guess I'm just asking you how drama relates to love, because I think there's a lot of examples. Like, what about a nice family where everyone is sane and they love each other and they sacrifice and there doesn't seem to be a lot of fluctuation, and yet it seems like love
is. You know what I think it is? It's something like this. It's like a preparation. You know, it needs salt, right? So without salt, it's not a preparation. You know, maybe I made a statement, you know, without salt, there's no good subject, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, you get someone, you know, who, you know, has this diseased tongue, you know, where, you know, it's just like oversalted or something like that. Or you know, so I guess the concept of rasa, I'm glad you answered, the concept of rasa is that the bhavas are required, but it's like a preparation in the right, you know, in the right combination and, you know, in the right combination, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, variety is the spice of life, you know. But, you know, when you have a feast, you know, it's probably better to have, like, two sweets that are really nice than, like, 25 that you can't taste anything, you know. So I would say it's like that there's drama that's a component of love, but in the right combination. And I guess the other thing is, you know, even and I'm just thinking of like, a stable family, right? Mm-hmm. But there's still drama, right? There's still anxiety. Will the kid get into the college? You know, or my child is sick or ill, or other things that happen. The family goes on vacation. You know, the daughter's away in college, and that's stable family. You know,
mm-hmm.
I guess it wasn't like I was quoting exactly a Shastic reference, but it was in terms of just reading it. And yeah, drama is required. And what I would say is, drama, and also the term drama just doesn't mean like, in terms of drama, it doesn't just mean the horrible experiences, you know, the challenging experiences. The term drama also refers to the good experiences, the meetings and the romances and the parties and the, you know, the happy things.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that the description of the spiritual world is this staibab, this particular affection is heightened by different experiences that somehow churn that love.
That helps, Mariusz. If something came to mind, may I put it before you real quick that you made me think of?
Someone in a relationship and two crazy people, you know. I know some of these relationships that wind up, you know, throwing the pots and pans, you know. You know, that wow. They're really, how fortunate, you know.
What love.
I didn't mean it to be a misunderstanding. Yeah.
I figured, Marge. I was kind of putting that forth as an example.
No,
I didn't.
It's something people could think. Yeah.
But you did make me think of the fact that, I mean, there's people that I went through very intense times with, and I could imagine. I mean, I've never fought in a war or anything like that, but I've heard people talk about when they go through something like that. The people that you share that experience with, there's a kind of intensity of relationship that you can't recreate in other environments quite often. So I think that there are a lot of examples from ordinary life of the kind of thing you're describing. Yeah, anyway. Thank you, Marsh. I appreciate it.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Vishnu Maharaj, Mr. Govardhan.
There we go. Tomorrow I come. Tomorrow I come over. I'll be there at 4:30. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
I want to see that play.
Gail, don't see it. It's just the story is. I mean, he said, you really want to hear it. I said, well, I'm not going to be able to go to the play, and I'm glad. Oh, my God. The situations that people think of in drama, it's just, this guy wrote this, and my God, oh. I don't want to give away the ending, but anybody else like to say anything else, Gail?
Yeah, I mean, so you're just giving more great advertisement. Where's the place being? Where is it?
In Washington.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to Washington.
Okay. Well, maybe it's a book. Who knows? Anybody else like to say hello?
sometimes people have problems muting, unmuting. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello, Maharaj.
Who's this?
Chaitanya Priya.
Chaitanya Priya. Yeah, we still have to talk. I somehow we haven't got around to that. Are you around later today, maybe in the afternoon or something?
Yes, that's possible.
Okay. Do you have my number?
Yes, I do.
My number? Why don't you try calling me, you know, in a couple of hours, possibly. Maybe 2 hours or something. Is that possible?
Yes, that's okay.
Okay, give me a call. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Haribo, Maharaj.
Hey, Shastra. Haribo.
Hi.
Great to see you this week.
Great program, yes. Thank you.
Kirtan was amazing. It was Broom Street. Wow. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, the Kirtan was amazing at this Broom Street. Wow.
Wow.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, Hare Krishna. One should help the two of you, sir.